world. Welcome to Discover Your Talent, Do What You Love, number 300. I'm creator and host Don Hutchison. Every day I interview someone from around the world who's discovered his talents to do work he loves to create a life of success, satisfaction, and freedom. Once a week, I interview a well-known expert from the fields of personal or business development who share experiences, tools, and insights to help our listeners along their journeys. Today, I'm delighted to bring you our featured expert, Barry Selby. Welcome, Barry.
Thanks for having me.
It's our pleasure. So today's topic is fascinating, looking for love in all the wrong places. Barry is a passionate champion for the divine feminine. He helps strong, successful, single women stop shortchanging their love life. When women get manipulated and hurt, it really ignites his passion to help them become wise and smart in their dating choices. He's passionate about women being honored and respected in love. So, Barry, take the floor on this topic and tell our listeners what you think about it and why it's so important.
Well, this could take some time, but I'll get some essential points out first. When it comes to looking for love, and I mean, the song does tell it all about looking for love in all the wrong places. So many of my clients, I've noticed, and I'm not saying men are any different, but as my primary audience is women, I'll speak to that side of the fence, as it were.
Sure.
And a lot of women are out looking for what they think is the right one. And they may even have a list of qualities, or even if they watch the Secret or study those sort of teachings, they may have done a vision board on the relationship they want to create, and they see someone that fits that criteria. And let me say this in a nice way. It's like looking at an iceberg. Above the surface, you see a little bit of ice sticking out, and you think, oh, it's no big deal. But beneath the surface, there's a whole mess of ice underneath that would do damage to the ship you're in, as happens at Titanic. Mm-hmm. And in the area of relationship, how that relates specifically is that we tend to be attracted to what we see externally about the other person. Maybe it's the car they drive, or the house they have, or the way they dress, or the way they seem to approach you. But I've worked with enough clients to realize how that can be so misleading, as that's incomplete. Largely because who we are really is often well below the surface, like the iceberg. And those difficulties we have in relationship are hidden away until the relationship progresses. Mm-hmm. And so what people do is they look at relationships, especially nowadays with everything changing, with online dating sites and smartphone apps, as well as the traditional matchmakers and everything else. They're being presented with a list of self-described qualities and pictures that will tell maybe 5% of the story. Mm-hmm. So that's the trap.
Right. Right, exactly. It's amazing. So what is one to do? What are the tools or insights that you can share that will allow people to not just be seduced, if you will, for lack of a better word, by the externals, and to get to know people at a deeper level, a soul level, a conscious level?
Well, you hit it on the head right there. Is one of the big pieces is don't get seduced by what you think the other person's about. Is be willing to take the time to explore and learn about the person in real interaction. You know, again, back to technology, so much of modern relationships seems to be based upon texting each other back and forward versus even a phone call. So to spend time in real inclusive communication, not just a quick text, but verbal talking by phone or even Skype, or better yet, in person, gives you a chance to explore what the other person's about. Mm-hmm. And so being clear about that and be so, I won't say adamant, but be so willing to take care of yourself enough to not just jump in blindly. That's probably a better way of putting it. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, and so a large part is exploration of understanding what the person's about. Secondly, though, and this is actually more important for my clients, especially because they're single at the time, is to get really clear about what is important as a list of what you must have in a relationship, and also what you do not want to have in a relationship, which is a deal breaker. Mm-hmm. Because a lot of times people go into relationships without having clarity on those two lists, and they end up getting into a relationship and going, oh, I didn't want that, but I'm already here now, so I'll put up with it. And then it just drives me crazy for the next few years. Mm-hmm. So that's a piece of it. The biggest piece, though, which is not talked about by dating coaches or by matchmakers, is that, and this is a work I've studied for a long time in my own psychological background, and also what I've seen other teachers talk about, is we are driven by our past. It's the automatic pilot that really is the, describing it clearly, it's like giving your own inner five-year-old the keys to the car and hoping it will drive you where you want to go.
That's brilliant. Yes.
Because that's really the level of consciousness we're playing with. In Bruce Lipton has a book called The Biology of Belief. And in his talks, I saw him talk last year, he mentions this, that basically our volition and our choices are driven by a consciousness. And the truth, like an iceberg, is our subconscious mind is below the surface, and our conscious mind is above the surface. And our conscious mind is only, frankly, about 5% of our energy and our ability to do things. So our ego, will, volition, free choice is in that 5%. The other 95% is automatic programming that we gained when we were kids. So that young five-year-old is really a subconscious mind in action. It's the midbrain that's driving the ship. And so we end up somewhere we didn't plan on being, because our subconscious has more control over our choices than our conscious mind does.
Yes, yes. Yeah, great marketers have known that for a long time, just in the marketing world. So
it translates to love and relationships just as easily.
Oh yeah, of course. Right, and a lot more seminal and key, since it's your life, not just a buying decision of a car or something. So
right.
That's important. That's vital. I love the idea of must-haves and must-avoids. I think that's, in my take on it anyway, would solve a lot of pitfalls if somebody would take the time to do that right from the get-go. Then they wouldn't be seduced by that little tip of the iceberg. But that's saying, wait a minute, you know, I'm a very metaphysical, spiritual person, and that's an essential. And, you know, I'm a vegan, or I'm whatever. And it doesn't matter how charming somebody may be in one area, if they don't have the essentials, then it's not even worth having a cup of coffee about.
Right. Well, what partly drives us is, one, we get driven by chemistry, which is a dangerous place to play, because chemistry, which is wonderful, right, though, can overpower and almost seduce us into things we didn't choose from. But secondly, sure, it's, again, being the place where we don't hold to our values what we really want. And part of that is, I believe, the large part of the population has this, and I hate to say it this way, but this sense of lack about relationship. Like, if they meet someone who's close to what they want, they've got to grab them because there may be nothing better coming along. And that's such an illusion, and it's a betrayal to ourselves to say that, because we always know there's someone better available to us if we simply are willing to be patient and do the work.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting. The chemistry thing is very tricky, isn't it? Because in my experience anyway, the chemistry thing is, you know, one of the key elements. If that's not there, but if that's all you got, then it's not enough.
Right. And because we were raised that way, most of us. I mean, when we were teenagers, it's what drove our hormones. Everything was right, inspired by the chemistry of reaction between us. That was like, oh, gotta have this.
Right,
and
right,
we didn't. And of course, as teenagers, we don't usually have any sense of really long term plans or life destiny or long term relationship. And the odds of meeting someone at that age and going, that's the one, and marrying, settling down, are very slim odds indeed. I know some people who've done it, but not very many people do.
Mm-hmm. So lay out some more of the tools or the structure of how you think about this for listeners. Whatever you'd like to share that you think might be helpful is there listening to us right now.
One of these things, and I mentioned before about having this sense that who we're looking for, you know, we have to settle for less than the ideal, and we think we need to get what we really want. It's because we may not appreciate who we are enough to hold ourselves to a high enough standard. And that harkens back to work and I've studied for quite a while with some very powerful teachers about the area of codependence. We've been raised in society subliminally almost because of all the love songs that came out from the 1950s onwards,
right,
that were basically teaching us about how love was a codependent exercise.
Yes, exactly.
So you know, we couldn't, you know, if you leave me, I'll die, or you know, you make me complete, you know, without you, I'm nothing, sort of thing. These
right,
these delusional statements, which are not true,
right,
but we're bought into those. So
yeah, exactly.
Part of the process, and for quite a lot of people I know, they don't do this, is when we're single is the best time actually to spend time getting to know and loving who we are ourselves as individuals. Because for many people, when they're alone, they're looking for the next one. Their focus is all outward, out there somewhere, is the person who will love me enough so I feel okay. And it's really missing the mark to realize that it's not about them making us feel whole. We are the ones that need to feel whole before we can even start this dance of romance.
How do you coach people to do that who don't know the modalities that you know or I know?
Well, it's anything as simple as basically being willing to enjoy your own company, learning to love who you are. And that's not something that you can just say, well, you can just do. But the truth is, it isn't that hard. It's doing things that nurture yourself, because many of us, including myself in the past, have a lot of habits we fall into that are not positive, they're negative. Maybe it's smoking or or doing things the way we don't, we binge on ice cream all the time. You know, ice cream isn't a bad thing, just we tend to take it, you know, badly. So behavioral things that we can do can be as simple as raising the standards of how we take care of ourselves physically, energetically, emotionally, mentally, all those levels. So doing things like meditation or sleeping longer than we do when we do 4 hours sleep a night. Like, let's do 6, take care of yourself and be healthier. Do things that respect our own self, even to the point where, and this is one of the exercises I give my clients often, is to do self-love practices in the mirror, where they're actually speaking into the mirror, into their own eyes, to appreciate themselves and love who they are. So that what it does is start to reset and rearrange our own cellular structure, because we may never have been told that growing up by maybe less than loving parents or by ex-relationships that put us down to make themselves feel better. And so we don't know that we actually deserve love because we've been trained by other people to think less of ourselves. So raising the standards and raising the vibration of our own love and respect gives us the opportunity to choose at a higher level because we deserve it.
Yes, yes. Yeah, it's a whole different, such a strong vantage point when you've got yourself first.
Yes, exactly. And by the way, one caveat is some people think, well, isn't that narcissistic or is that like being selfish? And it's like, well, selfish, yes, because it's kind of like the idea that you think that someone's going to love you more than you love yourself. It's actually not true. You can only be loved as much as you love yourself anyway. Yes. And so it's a must that we respect and are selfish in the sense that we take care of ourselves. We appreciate ourselves and put ourselves first in our life, because then you can have a relationship that can do the same.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So give us another step in the process.
Well, I mentioned about the fact that our 5-year-old is driving the car. Probably one of the most pivotal pieces of the work and some of the most transformational work we do with my clients is to actually go back in our own minds, our own history, our own lineage, and actually to make peace with that younger self. And basically, it's a matter of having a conversation, having a new set of beliefs installed, because those old beliefs are not permanent unless we don't do anything about them. And so we can change the programming, change the history, change the conversation that we have inside ourselves, so that what we have on the outside and what we have in life becomes more aligned to our true beliefs. Because, as I said, you know, 95% of our energy or so, as Bruce Lipton talks about, is spent focused on what our subconscious mind is programmed to think. We can change that programming in our subconscious mind so that 95% becomes aligned to the rest of our thoughts and gives us conscious volition going the direction we want to go in.
Yes. Yes, precisely. I guess that's a big part of what neuro-linguistic programming is about, isn't it?
Largely so. I mean, not the only part, but I have studied NLP, although I haven't finished my certification on that at this point. It definitely is a piece to be able to do both, and in my work with vision and future stuff, I do future pacing, which is part of NLP, but also to be able to go back into the timeline and to change and shift some of the belief structures around love, relationship, parents, and self-support. It changes everything. And it is a powerful tool for that purpose.
What is going on? You're out there in the marketplace and dealing with clients in these issues. What is the world like in 2016, and how dramatically different is it today? I mean, even as opposed to 5 years ago, what is that scene like in terms of what people are looking for? And of course, the internet and internet dating and a zillion different tools that have changed the game. What's that tool that came out, Cheeked? The tool Cheeked. It's an app. Laurie Cheek came out with, but what?
That's just one of many. Yeah, there's tons.
Yeah, there are tons. But what's it done to us? Has it pulled us away from ourselves just even more than we already are pulled away from ourselves?
Well, I would say it depends on which set of the population you talk to, because in millennials especially, that's become very prevalent, because there's a whole different mindset, and especially in the teens and early 20s. You know, there's been a current fairly modern phrase about when you go and do Netflix and chill. These are the new sort of buzzwords have been out there about just the way that people hang out.
Right.
And what's happened, particularly in the very young generation, talking about teens and early 20s, people do this where they go out in mass. They don't go out on dates with each other. They go out in groups and they go and hang out. Then they pair off when they're together, sort of thing. It's a very strange way of doing things. But in terms of the mature dating scene, if I want to put it that way, there are more tools available, definitely. And largely that is tied to the proliferation of smartphone apps like Tinder, Plenty of Fish, all these different apps are out there. Okay, Cupid, et cetera, et cetera. There's so many of them out there that basically put the power of the internet from your computer where you were at an office or at home into your hands, wherever you are, you can find a date. That is another tool. And I don't have an issue with the tools. It's just how they're used.
Right.
And so, as I mentioned about having clarity about what you really want and other things too, if you don't do the other work, it doesn't matter which device, tool, application, service, site you use, you're still going to get the same results independent of which one you're using, unless you do the work beforehand. So yes, the tools have changed and the devices are a way of getting access to the opposite sex and possible dates has changed, but the same issues are showing up.
What's that old expression, junk in, junk out?
Pretty much, yeah.
That was about computers, but yeah.
Well, yeah, actually, that was Gigo back in the old days. It used to be in the programming, the mainframes back in many, many years ago.
Was it? Okay.
Garbage in, garbage out.
Yeah, garbage yard. Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. What's next? Tell us some more. This is fascinating.
Well, back to the beginning, actually, where you said about having a clear vision of what you want to attract. After the release of the movie The Secret, especially, which was really teaching a lot of the Abraham Hicks teachings, there was this more public or more highly marketed device called the Vision Board, which people have known about for many years. I mean, I learned about it back in the 90s, just as basically like a collage of things you want to create and attract in your life, including some people do life versions of this, which is everything on the board is from life itself, with a quadrant of each part of the board about a different area of life, relationship, business, money, spirituality, et cetera, et cetera. But also, you can do a vision board for a particular thing in your life. Like in the movie The Secret, it was about a new bike, but it could be something like a new job or a new home or health and vitality, that sort of thing. In a relationship, it's another one of those options. The way I work with my clients is I start with the vision board, but I have probably 7 or 8 different things that we do after the vision board to reinforce and solidify what that vision board's about. Because the vision board is literally two-dimensional because it's just a board with pictures stuck all over it of an ideal scene you want to have or what you want to have in your life. You put it somewhere, you see it, and then over a period of time, ideally, it's supposed to manifest. Well, it takes more than that to do that. In my work with my clients, I actually do, with a blend of NLP and things with Feng Shui as well, do simple things that help to change the vision into a reality and making it more experiential so that not only is the experience of the vision board something your eyes see, but you chance to embody the feeling of what it would feel like to actually have that experience, because that becomes much more magnetic and more potent to attract what you want. In fact, that's a secret to anything you want to create. If you have a vision board about some area of your life you want to attract or have in your life, if you do things that are physically in concert with that, it creates more of a magnetic pull to attract that state of being to your life more quickly.
Yes. Yes. It makes complete sense. Yes. Wonderful. What else?
What else? Well, another piece of the work I do with my clients, which has been something that's really come forward for me in the last... Well, I started changing my life back in 2007, so it's been almost 9 years now, has been a passion for helping particularly women, my female clients, really become trusting and empowered in their feminine ownership. It's something that I've been watching for a long time, and frankly, in my past relationship history, I dated a lot of women who are more, seem to be more in the masculine than I was, which is really challenging. Mm. But women have over the last, well, since, to be honest, the sexual revolution of the 60s, there was a shift of polarity for women because they were being trained, and it wasn't the feminist movement really, it was really the masculine movement for women, but help women to become more empowered and go to work. And it's something that's really been running for basically 50 years, that women have been freed up from being the stay-at-home housewife, the one that stays at home whilst the mum is a breadwinner, which is important that women were given the freedom to go to work, own their own car, their bank account, their apartments, and have a sense of their own autonomy and being independent, which is important. But it also negatively impacts, well, it didn't negatively, but it changed the model of relationship from the old codependent model, which was kind of the breadwinner was the man and the woman stayed at home. That was the way it worked. It was very codependent, depending upon each other, where it became more independent because women didn't need men. In fact, that's the way a lot of women still think. They don't need men, which is true. They don't need them. But then it means that they tend to treat men differently and not from a place of respect. Mm-hmm. So a lot of the work I'm doing with my clients is helping them own their feminine magnificence and realizing that who they are and their feminine is actually more powerful, more useful, and more of a planetary support. I mean, this can sound somewhat amorphous, but I've found that and noticing that the more women that become comfortable and empowered in their feminine energetic, the more they're going to change the planet and make the planet a better place to live on. So there's a bigger picture coming through on this.
Yes, yes, yes. Well, it's so needed too, because there's still a huge disparity in the work world between men and women, and it's changing, but it's changing slowly in every profession. And so the kinds of skills you're teaching are very powerful.
Right.
So, well, this, any last words? We'll do this again. Any last words you want to share with listeners?
basically, I mean, to be totally selfish about it, if any of this resonates for any of the people out there listening, they want help, they can reach out to me.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, you're not being selfish at all. That was going to be my next question. Thank you for your sensitivity. How do people contact you?
The easiest way to find me out is to go to my website, which is my name. So just look at BarrySelby.com. And I am inviting those who are definitely interested in going deeper to reach out to have a discovery session or a consult with me, so we can talk for basically it's a 30-minute conversation. That's my gift, to really discover what it is you're looking for and if I can help you with it and see if there's an alignment between us. We want to work together.
Good. That's BarrySelby.com. So yeah. Listeners, please follow through on that if you're interested. That's wonderful. Thank you so much. A very illuminating conversation, and we'll do this again. This is much needed, and you are certainly a pro in this space, to say the least. Listeners can go to our homepage, discoveryourtalentpodcast.com, and check on the podcast section and find this interview with Barry and the highlights of the interview as well as the link. I want to thank you, listeners across the world, for joining us. Go to our homepage and find our infographic, What Do Highly Successful People Actually Do to Succeed, 12 Proven Career Building Strategies to Help You Do What You Love. You've heard me talk about this for months now, and we're having great feedback to it and from all over the world. And so please take advantage of it. It's free. You can subscribe on iTunes and Stitcher if you like our interviews, and we'd love to have you be a member of our tribe. In closing, every one of us is born with unique talents and gifts. We do not learn them. We cannot ignore them. They're just a part of who we are, our DNA. Whenever we discover them and use them in our lives and careers, we do not merely survive. We thrive in every way possible. So until next time, all my best, and whatever you do, have fun out there today.